Tonight our lesson is entitled, Is Jesus on Facebook? I will admit that I had a little bit of fun this morning with it when I announced that I had been able to hack into several of your Facebook pages and copy some pictures and quotations that I would use in some of the slides tonight for the sermon. I was bluffing, of course, but I'm not sure I ever got some of you totally calmed back down enough to listen to my sermon this morning after that, because I preached on Judgment Day and we only had one response. I have been promising, some would say threatening, this sermon for quite a while, and I hope you'll find it helpful. Let's settle this right now. Is Facebook wrong? No. Not any more than any number of things that we could think of that have a good and useful place as long as we use them in a proper way, bearing in mind our position as God's people. Now I realize that I'm standing before a diverse group with a very wide variation of experience with technology. Some of you, young and old, are right up to speed with the newest and the greatest and the fanciest of the consumer technology that's available. And at the same time, there are some others of you in this group, young and old alike, who would be as lost in the consumer electronics department of Best Buy as a catfish would be in a jewelry store. I know that I'm talking to a group of people, some who can relate to exactly what I'm going to be saying, and some who are going to sit there and at least figuratively scratch your head through this whole sermon. So let me start with this. This is an email that I got last week. I think Linda Russell sent it to me. You've probably already read it. If you have, you'll notice that I've edited it a little bit for my purposes here, but I want to read it to you. This fellow says, when I bought my BlackBerry, I thought about the 30-year business I ran with 1,800 employees, all without a cell phone that plays music, takes videos, pictures, and communicates with Facebook and Twitter. I signed up under duress for Twitter and Facebook so my 7 kids, their spouses, 13 grandkids, and 2 great-grandkids could communicate with me in the modern way. I figured I could handle something as simple as Twitter with only 140 characters of space. That was before one of my grandkids hooked me up on Tweeter, Tweettree, Twirl, Twitter Phone, Tweety, Twitterific, Tweeter Deck, Twix Picks, and something that sends every message to my cell phone and every other program within the texting world. My phone was beeping every 3 minutes with the details of everything under the sun. I am not ready to live like this, and so I keep my cell phone out in the garage in my golf bag. The kids bought me a GPS for my last birthday because they said I get lost every now and then going over to the grocery store or the library. I keep that in a box under my workbench along with that Bluetooth thing. It's actually red. It's a phone, and I'm supposed to wear it when I drive. I wore it once and was standing in line at Barnes & Noble talking to my wife on the phone, and everybody in the nearest 50 yards was glaring at me. I had to take my hearing aid out to use it, and so I guess I got a little loud. I mean, the GPS looked pretty smart on my dashboard, but the lady inside that gadget was the most annoying, rudest person I had run into in a long time. Every 10 minutes, she would sarcastically say, recalculating. You would think that she could be a little bit nicer. It was like she could barely tolerate me. She would let go with a deep sigh and then tell me to make a legal U-turn at the next light. And then if I made a right turn instead, well, it was not a good relationship. When I get lost now, I call my wife and tell her the name of the cross streets, and while she's starting to develop that same tone as the GPS lady, at least I think she still does love me. To be perfectly frank, I'm still trying to learn how to use the cordless phones in our house. We've had them for 4 years, and I still haven't figured out how I can lose 3 phones all at once and have nothing to do but run around digging under chair cushions and checking bathrooms and dirty laundry baskets every time the phone rings. Well, I think I know a little bit about how that guy feels, and I think some of you do too. I have been able to make a few progressive steps into the realm of technology, but most of it is still way ahead of me, and I know that there are a lot of you that are a lot further behind than I am. The term social networking is a relatively new term as such. It's only seen wide use in about the last 15 years or so. Social networking. But the concept has been around forever. Social networking was most likely what Lot was doing as he was sitting at the gate in Sodom when those visitors came to tell him to flee the city. Some people would say that it's what Absalom was doing as he was standing there in the way of the gate outside the city, giving his free advice to everyone who had a problem, gradually turning them away from his father David, the king, to himself in 2 Samuel 15, verse 2. A New Testament example would, of course, be the men of Athens, Acts chapter 17. Verse 21, where the scripture says that there on the Areopagus, those who lived there would spend their time in nothing except telling or hearing something new. That's social networking. People getting together and communicating, learning what's new with each other, chatting, figuring out the news, talking whatever's on their minds. Social networking for most of us has always taken place. For most folks, it's taken place down at the coffee shop, or in the morning at Hardee's or at McDonald's, or on Friday nights at the high school football field. That's what social networking has always been. When people with similar interest get together for whatever other reason and share information and news and chit-chat, as we say. But now social networking has taken up an entirely new vehicle. The World Wide Web of the Internet is scattered with social networking sites. You could see them as organizations to which you can join yourself. Organizations that make it easier. Organizations that facilitate communication between people who have something in common. I'm told that Facebook is by far the most prevalent, and from what information I've been able to learn in preparing this lesson, I think there's a lot of evidence to that. Facebook is probably the social networking site or system that more of you are members of than any other one. And so I've singled out Facebook for our title in our discussion tonight. Let me give you a few stats on Facebook. It was created in 2004. That's right. Just a little over 6 years ago. It's brand spanking new. Created, invented in 2004 by Mark Zuckerberg, who was at that time a student at Harvard University. He and some of his friends got their heads together, and they were already very well versed in computer programming and so forth. And so they saw the need for a system or a a way of communicating with each other within the school, and so they created Facebook. Mr. Zuckerberg is at 26, now the youngest billionaire in the world. He is this year, well, last year's 2010 Time Magazine Man of the Year. Facebook, according to their information page that you can find very easily, has over 500 million active users. 50% of those will log on in any given day. Over 200,000, these big numbers really get me mixed up. Over 200 million people are active users of Facebook on their cell phones. 200 million people. Within a randomly monitored span of 20 minutes, during this past year, 4,632,000 messages were posted on Facebook in a randomly selected 20-minute time frame. During that same 20 minutes, 2,716,000 photographs were posted on Facebook. There's even a website entitled www.facebookstatsfor2010, and it'll tell you how many people changed their status during the year of 2010. So many million people changed their status from married to divorced during the year. So many million people changed their status from in love to confused, all the numbers. Go there and look it up. You can read it for yourself. The average Facebook user has 130 friends. One of the things that drove me away from Facebook a while back was the number of people who wanted me to be their friend. I didn't have time to deal with all of that. The average user has about 130 friends. Here's the one you really need to remember. 700 billion, with a B, minutes per month are spent on Facebook. 700 billion minutes. I'm kind of glad I couldn't find my calculator this afternoon so I could figure out how much time that really is. 700 billion minutes a month on Facebook. One of the most popularly stated purposes of using Facebook is to reconnect with old friends, school buddies, neighbors, folks that you've moved away from or lost contact with in some way or another. Here's how it works in a nutshell. On Facebook, you have an account, a free account. Your account contains your profile information, your picture, a brief biographical sketch which you furnish to the folks at Facebook. You have a name that you use and a password by which you can log in to your own, basically, your own little website is what it amounts to. You can post. I'm sorry, old folks, when I say post, that means adding this to your website where everybody can see it. You can post pretty much anything that you want to post in words, text, or in photographs on Facebook. Most of what you post can be as private or as public as you would like for it to be if you will keep track of how you've got your settings adjusted. One of the things that so many people forget is that much of what is posted on the internet on Facebook is available for a frightening number of people to look at. I was told just last week of two people who were communicating back and forth on Facebook, and they got to a point in their conversation where one of them told the other, "Hey, we better go to email. Remember, this is Facebook and everybody can read this." Time would prevent me from going any deeper into the mechanics of Facebook, but I hope that I've been able to give you, especially the uninitiated among us, a little bit of an understanding of how prolific this system of information is. Information that individuals like you and me furnish, put there, post, for others to see, read, view, copy, forward, spread, or just simply to absorb. Now, let's talk a little bit about influence. This seems to be a good time to bring that subject up. Notice what the scriptures say. In Ephesians chapter 5, verse 8, Paul says, "For at one time you were darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light." In verse 11 of that same Ephesians chapter 5, Paul said, "Take no part in the unfruitful works of darkness, but instead expose them, for it is shameful even to speak of the things that they do in secret." Dropping down to verses 15 to 17 in Ephesians chapter 5, he says, "Look carefully then how you walk," and of course walk in the New Testament generally means live. "Look carefully how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of the time, because the days are evil. Therefore do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is." In 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 12, Peter reminds his readers to keep your conduct among the Gentiles honorable, so that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day of visitation. Romans chapter 2, verse 24, we find Paul speaking specifically to the Jews and even quoting from an earlier writing that had been written about them and said about them. In fact, Paul says, "For it is written, the name of God is blasphemed among the Gentiles because of you." And then my favorite, Matthew chapter 5, verses 13 through 16. "You're the salt of the earth, but if the salt have lost its savor, wherewith shall it be salted? It is thenceforth good for nothing but to be cast out and trodden under the foot of men. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle, put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light unto all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven." Everything that we've read reminds us of how important it is that we live in such a way and always conduct ourselves in view of the fact that we are representatives of Jesus Christ. In Galatians chapter 2, verse 20, Paul said, "I've been crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live, yet not I, but Christ lives in me." I want to share four or five keys or key needs for living like salt and light. Number one, we all need to make a decision to lead others in the right direction. Now you can do that right here and now. You can make that decision right now as you sit here. And every single one of us, if we haven't already made it, or if we haven't stuck by that decision, we need to make the decision to lead others in the right direction. Let me say this, though. Your decision absolutely must be consistent. It must be consistent with what you are and what you are doing. Or maybe we should turn that around and say what you are and what you are doing must be consistent with the decision that you make to lead people in the right direction. Because no matter how much you may or I may convince myself that I'm going to try to be a better influence, if I've got information out there for everyone to see or read, if I'm constantly sending email messages that testify that I must be something other than a Christian, I'm not being consistent. My decision must also be one that is seen in my persistence. If you're on Facebook right now, I don't mean on it right now, but if you are a member of Facebook, it may very well be strictly for selfish reasons. It might be because you're consumed with the idea of making yourself look good to others. Now, there's nothing wrong with looking good to others, as long as I don't have to lay my Christianity down in order to accomplish it. It may be that you want to have more friends, and there's nothing wrong with friends unless those friends require that I lay aside my Christianity in order to have those friends. It might be to see who all you can reel in so you can try to present yourself as attractively as you possibly can. Whatever your desires may be, make sure they're consistent with God's truth. Facebook, as we have seen, is a very, very powerful, can be a very powerful tool. It could be a tremendous tool of good influence. But one irresponsible post could damage the name of Christ to thousands of people. Let's make sure we're ready for that kind of responsibility. Number two, skip the fanfare, the hype, the self-promotion. Just do it, as Nike said. Just do it. Don't go around claiming to be something. Just be what you say. Nobody wants to hear what a good-looking guy you are. Just be a good guy. Nobody wants to hear about how beautiful you are. Just show them, by the way that you live, the inner beauty of a quiet and peaceable life of godliness. Come to a point in your life at which you recognize that it's not what you say, but it's what you do. It's how you are. And let that be what drives your communication, your influence. Roger Staubach led the Dallas Cowboys to victory in the Super Bowl of 1972. It was Super Bowl VI, I believe. Don't look at me like I grew up in the Old Testament. The Dallas Cowboys remain the only team to ever prevent their opponent from scoring a touchdown in the Super Bowl. They beat the Miami Dolphins that year 24-3. Staubach admitted that his position as a quarterback who didn't call his own plays was a source of trial for him. He was a Heisman Trophy winner. He was a young man who felt like he ought to be the one engineering the plays. Coach Landry sent in every single play. He told Roger when to pass. He told Roger when to run. He told Roger exactly what to do. And Staubach later said, I faced up to the issue of obedience. And once I learned to obey the coach, There was harmony, fulfillment, and victory. You see, it's the matter of obedience that is so important. And in my life as salt and light, if I've lost my savor, if I've lost the ability to influence others for good by the way that I live, I'm not obeying God. Number three, realize that your life is on display. You're the light of the world. If you're on Facebook, you are really on display. Keep that in mind. Those to whom you are the closest can really benefit greatly from your influence. But don't ever forget the fact that there are untold numbers who will be touched and influenced by you, but they will never cross your path. You will never lay eyes on them. Your life is on display. Is your status accurate on Facebook? You know, there are all kinds of questions you are asked, and you answer them. You tell your marital status, you tell your religion, you tell this, that, or the other, you tell what your favorites are. You. I'm not very experienced with it, but many of you are, I'm sure. In your profile under religion, did you skip that part? Choosing just rather to be sort of anonymous and not say, rather than to be associated with the Lord's church for fear of some kind of negative stigma? Or did you rather see that as an opportunity to tell people what you really feel about the truth of the New Testament? Number four, in your life of salt and light, make a stand for right and hold your ground. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. On Facebook or in the grocery store, in the office or in the classroom. At church or on the ball field. If the lamp of your life is not on a lampstand, where in the world is it? And then number five, the last one. Make all you do for God's glory, so they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. I realize that question, why do you do what you do, is a very complicated one and has some intricate answers, and sometimes those answers tend to vary a little bit depending on how mature we are, how old we are, and how much we care what other people think, and which category we want them to put us in their minds. But all that we do should be done to God's glory. Somebody says, well, you mowed the grass yesterday. I didn't really, but if they said you mowed your grass yesterday, how was that to God's glory? Well, I kind of like to turn it around and look at it the other way. Never do anything or do anything in any way that would be a negative against the glory of God. And so if I mowed my grass, and I made sure I had all my clothes on, I think that's glorifying God. Even in the most mundane of ordinary things that we do, and especially things we do in public, God is glorified when we conduct ourselves in an honest and wholesome and godly way. Is Jesus on Facebook? If you are, and if he lives in you, then yes, he is. And let's make sure we keep him there. And let's make sure we don't ever give him a reason to want to leave, especially from our page. If you're subject to our Lord's invitation, we invite you to respond as we stand and sing.